Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 312. That's three a dozen. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are Guillaume Veillette.
Too much Nintendo stuff to talk about, too little time.
Amen. James Jones.
That will be a nice change.
And our guest this week is Carl Castaneda.
I think I've been here before.
I think you have. You know, Carl, I was just thinking, I mean, we were talking before the show about how long we've been doing this, but I wonder how many people listening now actually remember you hosting the show. I mean, a long time ago. It was five years ago.
What's funny is I'll occasionally get tweets from people who say that who are recent listeners of this show and love it, who then out of curiosity will go back and listen to the original run and say, ooh, good God, what were you guys doing? Like, it's hysterical. I honestly love it because the show was so different back then, arguably far worse than it is now.
Far worse. I mean, obviously I was a fan because that's why I was, you know, wanted to be involved with it. So I'm not going to denigrate it, but I think it was very different. It was very free flowing, you know, structured. And that's one of the things I brought is because I didn't feel comfortable coming in and kind of just going off the cuff for an hour or 2 hours or whatever. And so I really felt much more comfortable bringing in more of a structure, a format. And I kind of took that from Film Spotting, which is one of my favorite podcasts of all time.
Sure.
But they have a very consistent structure to the show. And it really makes the listener feel more comfortable, more familiar, I think.
you're putting it very kindly.
Yeah, well. All right, so that's our Esoterica podcast meta discussion to kick off the show. But actually, we're here to talk about Nintendo, of course. First off, I wanted to say I was gone last week, and I wanted to thank very much our guests, Nate and Donald, for sitting in and helping out. It was awesome. Those guys did a fantastic job. And, of course, want to thank James for hosting. Thought you did a really nice job, James.
I'm
really
good.
And Guillaume for editing, which I take for granted, and I gladly admit that I take it for granted, because that's what I love about it, is that I don't have to fucking worry about it week in and week out. I just know the show's going to turn out awesome every time, because Guillaume is so good.
Let's just say that you could have heard a lot more about Minecraft.
To be fair, I wasn't the one pushing the conversation in directions it went in. Okay. I was being asked questions. I was providing answers. That's what a journalist does.
That is...
Yes, oof. Yes. Also wanted to mention that in the second segment, this episode, we're going to talk about Wii U. There's been some late developments. Guillaume got to play it again at an event in Montreal. So, there's a lot to talk about, I think, and the system is only about 3 weeks from coming out. So it's really the season. And of course, there's a lot more stuff to talk about. So I wanted to move that out of new business, so we don't get it too crammed in there. And we are going to do new business first, and Guillaume has played some really awesome 3DS games, and I want to hear about them.
Yeah, I did, at the same event that you just mentioned in Montreal. So this was, I believe, the same event that Neil went to a couple of weeks ago in New York City.
Yeah, they're traveling around like a circus.
Yeah. So, you know, it was the same demos, and so immediately when I arrived, I went straight for the Fluidity demo.
That's my man. You know what to do.
Because the Wii U stuff from a distance, like, they were all pretty much stuff that I had played before. So, yeah, Fluidity.
Jaded.
Already.
I don't need to play Wii U. I've done that before.
But yeah, like, Fluidity is one of my favorite games of, well, I guess we can say last generation now.
Not for 3 weeks, you can't.
I guess. Yeah. Okay. So this generation. And so, the new game is pretty good. And it's really solid. It's the same kind of gameplay that we already know we love. I think that the level structure now is pretty smart. I know that the exploration in the original was, you know, very well done and very appreciated.
But polarizing too. I mean, some people didn't like that part of it.
Yeah, and I think that with portables, like perhaps it's not our case, but a lot of people, they just pick their handhelds up, you know, once in a blue moon, just, okay, I got to take the train now, so I'm going to bring my 3DS. So there's a big risk, I think, of not really knowing where you've been and where you're supposed to go next. I guess that could also be solved by, you know, like a more detailed map, but... You know, like when you've got a series of levels, you know exactly what's coming next. One of the things that it's doing differently now is that I guess it has replaced exploration for platforming.
Well, there's a lot of platforming in the first Fluidity.
I know, but it's really ramped up here.
It's been like a priority change.
Yes, huh. Yes.
Yay! Because... I'll play this game now.
Because, you know, like you could collect water droplets in the original and that would fill up vials that would basically become new lives as you explored. The droplets are back, but now you're kind of being graded on how many you catch. And they're not just, you know, like hovering in the air and, you know, waiting for you to grab them. Sometimes a series of them will just appear when you reach a certain area, when you trigger them. And then you have to madly dash, you know, and try to get them before they disappear again. And a lot of times when you catch them all, then you make a big droplet appear. So it's, you know, like it's kind of a red coins mechanic, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking of Mario when you said that.
Yeah. So yeah, and so when you finish a level, you can be graded on, you know, 1, 2, 4 stars. And there's also a timer when you're going through the level. And if you also manage to finish before the timer is out, then that pushes your grade to 5 stars. And once you've 5-starred the level, there's an icon indicating that on the level select screen. And each level also seems to have one puzzle piece, and that also shows up when you find it on the level select screen. So, yeah, like, it's just, it seems very smartly designed. There's some new puzzle types, for instance, new switches that will change gravity. And those types of switches are usually in the 360 kind of levels, the ones where you have to spin your 3DS upside down. And
so those are cordoned off in special levels when you have to do that?
Yeah, I would say that I only had the first world unlocked. I would say roughly half of the 15 levels of the first world were 360 degrees.
Huh. Cool.
So yeah, the 360 levels I have some issues with. I think it's going to be a little bit harder to do some, you know, really precise platforming in them. When you're holding the 3DS upside down, it's a little bit harder to reach for the jump button, which is L and R. So you've really got that to think about. Yeah. And initially, I was not really used to it, so I kept it, like, this was being played on a 3DS XL. I kept hitting the start or select buttons as I was just rotating the 3DS. So
well, rotating the XL is pretty much a task in and of itself.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to work out a lot.
Yeah, and then I remembered, oh yeah, Billy said that he would just like tilt it forward and it would work. So I did that, and yeah, it did work much better. But that way, like, you do end up kind of feel like you're playing Kirby's Tilt and Tumble, except with on a much, much, much better screen.
Yeah, I think they should bring back Kirby's Tilt and Tumble now that the technology has kind of caught up to what they were trying to do in that game. I still think that was a cool idea that was not all that workable on Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
But I think they could totally do it nowadays.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds awesome. I'm obviously pretty hyped about it. But it's coming after... It's after Christmas, so that one's pretty far out. So.
Yeah, I don't get it. The game is completed, and... Come on. I want to buy it. I want to keep playing it.
They want people to buy it with all their gift cards that they get for Christmas, I guess.
It's being released on December 27th.
Perfect.
Yep.
Well, look, Thursday falls when Thursday falls, okay?
So yeah, that was one of the games I played. The other game that I played, Crashmo. I'm not really that far into Pushmo. I mean... I think that, Johnny, you mentioned seeing like 80% of the game and that was satisfactory for you. I probably saw 50%. At some point, the
Oh, so you finished the tutorials.
Well, yeah. Okay. We'll get to that. But yeah, like at some point, Pushmo got, you know, kind of a little bit more challenging, and I kind of stopped playing. But Crashmo, I did start the game from the start, so I did have to go through every tutorial, and I was sitting there and just wondering, like, oh my god, I really hope it's not as bad as Pushmo, because otherwise, like, I'm not going to get through the tutorial during, like, this afternoon, this whole afternoon that I have playing Nintendo games. So, and yeah, like, it was initially pretty damn bad. You know, like, the grandpa was back, you know, imparting his wisdom, and I knew that, yeah, I was in for a bad time when he's, like, I started pushing a block, and he started saying, like, ooh, do you see the gap here? Don't be afraid, you can jump over it.
Oh, just in case you've forgotten how jumping works.
So I get to the spot.
It's a fucking video game!
I get to the spot where I can jump the gap. Immediately, I'm stopped, and I have to read more text, and it says, all right, go ahead, you know, like, try it, jump the gap. Oh, come on, like, I was just about to do that. Like, how stupid do you think I am?
It stops and goes, hey, do you know what gravity is? Let's explain gravity first. Gravity is the force that pulls you to the ground.
As much as people like to defend Nintendo's use of text versus voiceover, I think one of the unavoidable downsides of that is that you have to stop the game in order to read the text.
Yeah,
it causes... This is a pretty rampant problem through a lot of first-party Nintendo games, is that the pacing is all fucked up because they're constantly making you stop to read things. I mean, Zelda is really bad about that, and we're probably going to hear about this later, but Paper Mario series is terrible about that. Mm. And, you know, I'm not saying that every Nintendo game should have voiceover, but I think if they're intentionally going to avoid voiceover, then they should be a little more conscious about just how much text they make you force you to stop and read, because a lot of it is probably unnecessary.
Yep. And speaking of unnecessary text, the following level, not only do I get a gap that I have to jump over, but there it's like one square higher, you know, like I have to jump up and across a gap at the same time. So I have to read... about, you know, Grandpa's wisdom about how you can totally pull that off. Oh, good. Gee, thanks.
Wow.
Yeah.
By the way, have you ever heard of video games? You're playing one right now.
I wonder if this is just an intelligent systems thing, because they made that, and they made Paper Mario, and it seems like a lot of their games have this problem.
But, you know, once I got past that, I got to a couple of levels, still within the tutorial levels, but, you know, where I was let loose and the grandpa just said, oh, this puzzle has a trick to it. If you can't figure it out, just come talk to me. So, I never talked to him again. And,
you just went to the old folks home and said, never again, grandpa, never again.
But it's good to know that he's there watching over you.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, like it feels pretty damn fresh for a game that basically uses the same structure and the same graphics and the same puzzles as Pulmo. Just the idea of you pull a block, a load-bearing block, and the blocks over it are not gonna follow and are gonna fall, you know, in a cascade, and you have to create your own stairways and pathways. It does change up the formula significantly. You can't just push and pull at the same blocks over and over again, just trying to stumble upon the solution. Because if you do make one mistake, you can't just, you know, like put the piece back. You can rewind, but, you know,
I see what you mean. I mean, in the original Pushmo, you could either rewind time or you could just put the blocks back where they were.
Yeah.
And not very many levels in the game would put you in a situation where if you made a move, the only way to reverse it was to literally reverse time. And
yeah.
It sounds like with Crashmo, they said, you know what, we have this really cool, rewind feature already built into our engine. Why don't we use that by building levels that are more, more cause and effect, in that when you do something, you can't just put it right back where you had it before.
Yeah, because in Pulmo, really, I only rewinded when I fell off a place, a high spot that I couldn't easily get back on. But in this case, actually, while I was playing the Crashmo demo, I kind of forgot that the rewind feature was there. So I could have saved myself some trouble. I kept hitting the reset switch. And because I did, you know, screw up a lot during these initial levels. I would say that the later part of the first set of tutorial levels are actually, like, they can become pleasantly challenging. I really had to think about what I was doing. I had to be careful, and it was a lot of fun. There's also one of the big differences is that you're not really looking from the same angle all the time anymore. Like, the puzzles themselves are more 3D. You have to use the D-pad to look from the sides and from the back, and you really have, you know, to think about the whole structure that you're building. So it's a good challenge.
Okay, so what about the big hitter, Paper Mario?
Yes.
The holiday game for 3DS.
I already wrote some impressions on the website if you want to check that out. Paper Mario. I it's not my favorite RPG, Mario RPG franchise, I have to say. I always kind of thought that Mario and Luigi was just funnier and the pacing was a little bit better. You know, Superstar Saga was 20 hours long. It was perfect.
Yeah.
Vehemently disagree, but that's fine.
Continue. Anyway, the dialogue was really funny, and then I got to Thousand Year Door, which was my first Paper Mario game, and yeah, sure, it was charming. I kept playing, trying to see, you know, like, what was coming next. I think discovering the different areas was really what kept me going, but I can't say that I was really won over by the jokes. I don't think that I laughed out loud all that often. But now, Sticker Star... disclaimer, I played a French version. I couldn't back out of the game and try to switch the language without probably breaking something. So, my impressions are about the French version, but I'm pretty sure that the French localization is based on the English one. The French localization was actually pretty damn good. So, I'm pretty sure that the English one is at least as strong. So yeah, like, almost immediately, the game kind of won me over by actually being funny. I can't say, like, the dialogue in the game is just priceless. And I think that one of the examples that I give is that at some point you're looking around trying to find every toad in the village. So you find them just plastered against walls. They're kind of stuck there. And so you pull them off and they thank you for saving them. And there's a... At some point, you enter a house and you open the cupboard, and a stack of paper and of toads just fly out, and they just rejoice. And one of them talks to you and says, "Oh, thank you, Mario. I thought, you know, we're gonna be there forever. Oh, by the way, when Bowser put us away in the cupboard, he made sure to tap our edges on the table to make our edges align before putting us there. Who knew that Bowser was so conscientious? We could all learn from his example." It's just, you know, like, priceless dialogue like that. And there was a lot of it just in the initial village, and none of it was boring. All of it made me smile. I'm now convinced that I will buy this game, because I really wasn't sure before I tried it.
Excellent.
Other than that, I mean, yeah, you do find stickers everywhere, and you do use them in combat, and they do disappear once you use them, but I didn't come close to running out. I don't know what happens if you do. There's always a command to run from a battle, so maybe you have to use that at some point. When you do well, when you actually time your blocks and your attacks, you do get a lot of coins, and you don't get experience points. You just amass coins to buy more stickers, and maybe you upgrade that way. I don't know. Once I realized that I wasn't leveling up, I did avoid more fights, and I'm hoping that that means that you are not going to be too bugged down by combat in the game. But then again, like, maybe it's going to be really, really grindy, and at some point you're going to have to pay 5,000 rupees to decipher maps, a la Wind Waker, and I don't know. Like, I'm really crossing my fingers that they did the pacing right in this one.
This sounds like a big gamble. I mean, to take the leveling up out of an RPG.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're not the first to do it. Other RPGs have done it in the past. It's just
like what?
Oh, it's a bunch of the
I'm not challenging you. I just never heard of one before.
I'm trying to think. What? God, there was a Super Nintendo game from, I think it was from Capcom, that doesn't have any leveling in it. You just sort of gain new abilities as you play.
Well, what I'm hoping for is that perhaps a more Zelda or Metroid-like structure where you actually find the power-ups, you know, like the heart pieces right. of Zelda or the energy tanks. That would
yeah,
be
like
perfect.
Making it kind of more of an adventure game where it's just you keep moving forward and your character grows and gains new abilities, but it's not based on this, you know, rigid statistical system of experience points and things
well,
like
I
that.
Well, I mean, I would argue the majority of Nintendo's RPGs in the past haven't been as outwardly statistical as
yeah, I mean, if you look at, like, you know, the Superstar Saga, there really isn't much of a grind in those games.
No, but that's just because it's balanced in such a way that, you know, you don't need to level up very much to continue, but you still level up. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Paper mm-hmm. Mario, you know, even from the original N64 game, was pretty bold in that direction. It's like, this is an RPG, but we're stripping out a lot of the stuff that you associate with RPGs, and we're going to make it way simpler, and it'll yeah. still be fun. But this just sounds like they're really taking a pretty significant step beyond what they've done before. I mean, even in Super Paper Mario, you leveled up, right? I'm pretty sure that you did.
I don't think it was as straightforward as just a regular level system, though. I want to say there was something a bit different about it. But I can't
I'm a little rusty on that game, but...
Well, yeah. I mean, we all played it so many times.
Two more points that I want to touch on. There were a lot of, you know, sticker-based puzzles already in the beginning of the game, so I'm looking forward to that. There were obvious places where you had, like, the outline of a door, and I'm sure that at some point you get a door sticker that, you know, is going to unlock a new area. And also there was Billy said that he felt that the 3D was kind of off in the game, but he did mention that it was his first time seeing a 3DS XL, and I'm guessing that's what the problem was, because the 3D just looked it looked really great.
This is why we don't trust Berghammer.
It's not that I don't trust him. It does feel weird the first time that you look at the 3DS XL screen.
I think Guillaume's also playing a newer demo, because the version Billy played was only about 2 minutes long.
Pretty sure that what I played was the actual full game.
Ah, yeah. So that might be the difference as well. Well, you know, if it sounds like they are doing some really interesting things with it. And I think if they do lower the emphasis on combat, which I do think in the Paper Mario series, I tend to get kind of sick of the combat after a while yeah. because it is so simple. And especially with, you know, if they don't have partners, if it's just Mario, then just, you know, it just, there's not that much variety in the combat. So if they peel back on that a little bit and then put more of the emphasis on puzzle solving, that sounds like a great decision to me. So I'm super excited.
I like the combat in those games. I'm not necessarily in love with it. Like, I enjoy the simplicity of it and the fact that it's action-y, but yeah, it doesn't have the depth of most RPG combat systems.
Yeah. It's like, I tend to think after about 15 hours, I have really had quite enough of that stuff.
And, like, Paper Mario games are often, like, 40 hours long.
Yeah, I remember Thousand Year Door feeling way too long, but I don't remember how long it actually was.
Well, yeah, if you were sick of it after 15 hours, you would feel like it overstayed its welcome.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely did.
I want to say the original's about 30, I mean, it's been probably a decade, but I think it's about 30 hours long.
Probably,
so
long.
Yeah. I mean, I blazed through it pretty quickly. It wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, maybe I was, I think that I tried to finish, like, everything in the game before I stopped
Don't
playing.
Don't bother.
Yeah. So I think my file is around 35 hours.
All right.
But yeah, that's a sticker star. Very good. I'm looking forward to it.
So, thanks, Guillaume. We're going to hear more from you later in the show and hear about your Wii U impressions. But Carl is up next with a brand new 3DS eShop game.
That's right. When Johnny told me I was going to be on the show, I figured, hey, I should play something on a Nintendo system just to be topical.
Good call.
So
That's how I do it, by the way. I just dial people I know and I say, you're going to be on RFN.
Johnny's actually their Nintendo's number 5 salesman
yes.
right now.
Yes. When I received my homework assignment from Mr. Metz, from Dr. Metz, sorry.
He will correct you. Watch
yeah,
it.
that I was to play Liberation Maiden, I took him up on it. So I decided
I don't even know what this game is. No, he's making this up.
No, of course. When Johnny offered the chance to come on RF, I should say, I decided, okay, well, I should get something from the eShop. And since today is Thursday, you know, we have our new release today. I picked up Liberation Maiden, which is actually a Goichi Suda game.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Wait to typecast yourself.
Exactly. You know, got a whole. Well, I was going to do Night Sky, but actually it turns out it worked out flawlessly because Johnny's going to talk about that game later. Yeah, essentially, Liberation Maiden is about a 16-year-old high school student who is president of Japan.
Because it's Goichi Suda, just to be clear.
Who is president of Japan.
Again.
Japan is under tyranny from this foreign nation that has taken over all of its major cities. And so the president of Japan, again, a 16-year-old high school girl, has a mech that she uses.
A position that doesn't exist, by the way.
Yes, correct. she gets into this mech and then liberates. You're seeing how this is coming together? Different cities in Japan with said mech. It is a shooting game. Third person, you're sort of in a flying mech and you're sort of flying around various Japanese beachfronts to take out large spires, basically, with your mech. It's funny, you know, when I'm describing it, I was like, all right, well, it's definitely a little odd, you know, definitely up Grasshopper's, you know, alley. But I was like, you know, is this really going to be, how is this going to compare to other, you know, Grasshopper games that I played before? It is actually 100% a Grasshopper game. There are long periods of time.
He says that way too excitedly. It's a Grasshopper game.
There are long periods in which you do the same thing, i.e. blow up subs and other small boats. And then eventually you get to the boss battle. Which is actually very interesting. Each boss, I've only played the three stages so far, but each boss battle is essentially a network of spires that you have to sort of blow up one by one. But there are different defenses and attack patterns. One of them, you know, shoots out huge fire, like huge stones on fire. You know, other ones have these gigantic sort of laser sentries that fly around and they have to dodge. It's really fun, actually. Basically, the way you play is, you know, you fly with the analog stick and you use the stylus to target and then tap to shoot. It's actually a lot of fun. It's definitely
simple. What are your index fingers doing? Couldn't you shoot with L and R? That sounds like it could have been almost like Kid Icarus Uprising.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I suppose you could, but the thing is, you would have to aim as well. So you're using the stylus to aim and tap to shoot. If you were just firing with R, it would be hard to aim as well. You know what I mean?
I don't know. That's how Kid Icarus works. I feel it is
hard to control.
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean, that is the primary knock against that game is its ridiculous control scheme.
Yeah,
you get used to it.
Yeah, I would say Liberation Maiden is fairly intuitive. You pick it up pretty quickly. So I wouldn't use the controls as a knock against it. I did have some pretty crazy hand cramps, but I would attribute that more to...
Always a good feature.
I would attribute that more to holding the 3DS in general. I think that whenever I play any 3DS game for more than 30 minutes, my hands cramp up.
Oh yeah, you should get an XL.
Yeah, I should. I really should.
Big difference.
And then it would double as a free weight too, so that'd be pretty sweet. Liberation Maiden is great though. I mean, it's I think it's $8. Yeah, definitely worth picking up.
It was one of those games in the collection that came out in Japan. It was a retail game in Japan, but it came. What was it called? Something Zero One.
It was called Guild 01. It came out through Level 5. It had it had three other games on it.
Whom you were a gun runner, which is great.
There's one that's based in an airport. You're like a baggage handler or something weird. But
you're an ops manager at an airport. Essentially.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, I wish that game came out here.
Yeah, there's another one where it's like a rhythm game, but by you know keeping to the rhythm, you're creating weapons to sell to heroes.
Yep.
That one actually sounds really interesting. I kind of hope that one comes out stateside.
I do think this is the right way for them to have released this game. I mean, I would have bought
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
This is what we wanted XC to do with Retro Game Challenge 2, you know, and they said it's just not financially feasible to do it, but that was the idea. Is just like, this game is made up of these awesome mini games.
Mm-hmm.
Break them up, and, you know, Nintendo's done this with Electroplankton and other stuff, so.
Yeah, I mean, XC had a license to deal with, I think, is the primary reason they didn't do it.
Oh, yeah. Retro Game Challenge is a really complicated licensing project, so that's one of the reasons. Also, they would have had to port it to 3DS.
I will say that there is some hilariously bad dialogue in this game.
Again, Koichi Suda game.
Yeah, like, basically whenever you complete an objective, it sort of scrolls some, like, a statement taken from, like, a random citizen of Japan, who says something like, "I knew our president was powerful, but I didn't know she was so pretty." Like,
Jesus!
Wow. It was really...
Is he working out his psychological demons while he makes these games? What the fuck?
Yeah,
will this game be banned in, what, the Netherlands? Or what was it?
I hope so.
For implied...
implied ephemophilia or something like that? Maybe. Maybe, I don't know. It's never made super clear why with the entire... Because there is a military that is supporting you. Why no one from the military is actually in the conflict, but
So it sounds like a parody of Metal Wolf Chaos.
Yeah, you play as the president of the United States.
Yes,
in a mech.
As he busts out of the White House in a mech to stand down a coup staged by the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, awesome.
But just imagine Joe Biden taking over the country with a mech. Just think of it for about 10 minutes.
I'll pay to watch that.
Next week on the front page of The Onion.
Yeah, I know.
Go ahead and check out Liberation Maiden. I definitely say it's worth checking out. And plus, for $8, you know, what are you going to lose?
$8?
$8, indeed.
Next question!
Well, the other game I want to talk about, and I know there's a little bit of a ban on iPhone games, so I'll keep it short.
It's not true.
I want to
it's
talk
just the
about,
rest of us know better.
Yes. Well, I clearly don't, because I want to talk about Letterpress. Letterpress is essentially a mix of Boggle and some sort of territory game. Essentially, it's a head-to-head game in which there are 25 tiles on a board, each one with a letter, and by using those letters you can construct words, and by constructing those words you now have placed your color on that tile. Whoever has the most tiles under their color at the end of the game wins. So it sounds really simple, but there are some sort of advanced techniques that you can use to sort of gain tiles back, and sort of longer words will have, you know, sort of an added effect of taking away from other people as well as adding to your score. So there are definitely some other things going on there, and it is unbelievably addictive. I have probably beaten Mike Sklens 3 or 4 times in a row today. He will probably back me up on my supremacy at Letterpress. I've also played, let's see, Nate Mustafa a fair amount of time, and have trounced him as well. The only person so far who can beat me at Letterpress is Andy Gergen, because he's crafty.
I thought it was because Obi deliberately picks ironically bad words.
No, although I have gotten some weirdly, like, he'll call me out on, like, first of all, how can you cheat? It's a word game, but he'll call me out on supposedly cheating. For words that, like, he's like, dude, you don't know the word supremacy. I'm like, of course I do. Come on. So, I don't know. I think something's afoot with Obi, personally. But,
well, we've known that for a while. Yeah. What's your point?
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's a very simple game. There's really not much to say about it, but it's free on all iOS, devices, and it is like crack.
Okay.
If you're a fan of word games, you can't go wrong there. It's free.
So, James is up next with, question marks.
Yeah. So I've got a bunch of reviews that I'm going to run through, not in-house reviews, but just like wrap-ups of other things I've spoken about in the last few weeks. So I have finally pushed through what was the most hellacious experience ever playing Dark Souls. Because I mentioned the game was unfair, and there was a whole lot of feedback in the forums that I don't know what I'm talking about. And then I posted this exact case, and they're like, oh yeah, that's unfair. And it is. The game has status effects, but one of them is called curse. At which point you instantly die when you're cursed. Your health is permanently cut in half, and you can't do anything about it until you find this guy that's hidden way the F at the other end in this, like, really dangerous area. It's like, wow, that's awesome game. The game actually hides a secret way to get rid of it, which is how I got through it. Which is, it's cool that you can do these kinds of secret things. But the fact that that status effect even exists is absurd. So
I think I remember reading about that, and I think maybe it has been patched now, but I remember reading that it was stackable.
It is stackable.
Oh, yes. Shit.
Yeah, so you can get cursed, and then going to get rid of it, get cursed again, and have even less health, a quarter of your health, than an eighth of your health, because this game is fucking like that. But, so when I finally got rid of it, I was able to resume playing. You know, I got lost a bit. I explored for a while. I got some really neat gear just by either finding things or attacking certain enemies. And then I came across the namesake of the episode in which I talked about it, the Gaping Dragon, and immediately understand why that thing is infamous besides its name. This game is so incredibly, so much ill will towards the player, I can't even put it into words. It's amazing and disturbing at the same time. So bravo. Bravo to the developers of this game.
So yeah, I'm not surprised that you respect it, James, for being such an asshole of a game. But do you actually like this? I mean, are you going to keep playing it?
That's the tricky part. It's like, I want to keep playing it because I see these people. I mean, I understand people love the hell out of this game. People whom I either respect for their ability to play games or understand that I should be able to deal with this game if they can. this isn't like me throwing down the gauntlet. There's people who aren't as
patient.
Yeah. I mean, that's really the right word for it. They aren't as patient as I am with some stuff. So it's like, clearly I should try to get through this, but for the love of God, game, stop it. And it just has this ability to wear on you where you just feel like, all right, game, you know what? Fuck. You win. Whatever. I would love to be able to continue to play this game in a way that I find to be enjoyable, but I just don't know that I can. I mean, when you come across a proper boss in the game and it's huge and massive and terrifying and just rampages around, it's really cool. And when you finally beat it, you feel like a badass. But you don't quite feel like a badass when you accidentally summon a player who's playing the game for the 13th time into your town and he kills it for you. You just kind of feel bad. And that's kind of how I've beaten two of the five bosses I've beat so far, so it's pretty depressing. The first time it was an accident, and I just realized all the bosses were dead. I'm like, wait, what happened? And then the second time, I'm like, I give up! Fuck it! Bring somebody in for help! But
yeah, when you reach the point of desperation that you're bringing other people in to play the game for you...
That you don't even know.
Maybe your time is better spent elsewhere.
Yeah. So, in the case of the so-called Gaping Dragon, I have brought in three people, and so far, all of them have been killed. It's not a strong showing so far. I'm like, wait, supposedly these are people who can beat this thing. Shit! So, hopefully, I'll get through that nonsense eventually. And I don't know how much further I'm going to play it. I'm still in this opening segment where you have to ring these two bells, and once you do that, the game apparently opens up quite a bit and becomes way more interesting. So, like, I really just want to get there. You know, if I get there, I feel like I can make a good call on the game. But I just can't fucking get there. It's awful. It's just constant suffering.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So, I also wanted to, although Guillaume will probably moan about it, I wanted to discuss a little bit more about having played Minecraft considerably more now.
How big is the penis now?
It still isn't been built yet, although I did build a tremendous start to a really freaking tall tower, only to realize when I walked away to find more supplies. And yeah, so I actually take a step back. I got started in this like valley. It's not even a high valley. It's like a hilly area on the edge of the desert. So I'm in a woods on the edge of a desert. All the hills are pretty low. I completely dug out one of the hills at this point. It's just rock. It's just a big stone that I live in. I went out exploring for brick and then encountered the fact that the place I live, my giant tower I'm so proud of, is actually much smaller than most of the mountains in the game. So, because the game is procedurally generated, you know, you'll just wander around and then occasionally you'll stumble across something really awe-inspiring. But I happened across a mountain that was so big that I basically spent, I don't know, half an hour just trying to climb up it. I mean, it took me forever to get up there. And it was really worth it once I got there, because it was just this huge, sprawling, like, I could see everything around me. It felt amazing. And then I realized I couldn't even see my tower from there, so everything I had done was totally insignificant. Thanks, game. But I was digging in my underground mine that I spoke of, only to find that a certain Xbox friend of mine was looking for someone to play with. Then to find that this individual has now leapt into my game. That individual was Ty Shugart.
Oh boy.
Uh oh.
So
see where this is going.
The first thing I get is just cackling coming through the Xbox headset.
Oh god.
Keep in mind, Ty's in Japan right now, and I'm playing. It's like 2 a.m. So for him, he's like 2 p.m. He's ready to go.
Did he start to like spray paint the Guilty Gear logo over all your surfaces?
So,
and like...
so he's trying to figure out where I'm at, and I've gone off on a mission to collect sand so I can build glass. So I'm off, but I'm off in the desert just gathering sand and running away from creepers every 20 seconds. And I come in, and he goes, "Hey, you know, you've got a pretty nice mine here." And I realize he's unsealed the area that I had sealed off because it was full of terrible monsters. And I'm like, "Oh shit, I know exactly where he is." I come running back to the I ask him like, "Whoa, oh, you mean the one I've been digging?" He's like, "No, there's nothing in that one. The one behind your staircase." I'm like, "Oh crap, he went in there." The one behind the door. I'm like, "Yeah, I know." And I went and ran in there, and sure enough, it's just fucking full of monsters. And he's like, "Don't worry, I've lit some torches, so now there's one little path you can walk and be safe." I'm like, "Except for when they come out of their dark area and kill me." He's like, "Oh yeah, well that's the problem you gotta deal with, but whatever." So he's like showing me where all the stuff is, like all the resources. He's like, "If you keep going down here," and then we bust through this thing in the ground, and we get swept by a river underground all the way into a lava pit. Awesome. This is going great. So I'm trying to mine this lava to use it, because if you have a furnace and you just put a bucket of lava in it, it's like you don't need coal anymore. That furnace goes for fucking ever. So I'm trying to get lava. I'm like, "Ty, how do I get lava into the bucket?" And I'm like, I'm standing there hitting it with the bucket and it's not doing anything. He goes, "Hold on, let me try something." And then he just knocks out a brick and water comes down and I get knocked into the lava.
Dead.
But and I lost my bucket. Fuck. Honestly. But he actually was remarkably helpful for a while, and then he built this portal to the Nether and we both got killed because the portal got destroyed.
I mean,
by giant floating octopuses.
Ty Shugart is chaos personified. Sometimes it helps you, sometimes it doesn't.
I'm looking forward to just getting through the stupid achievement stuff so I can just build whatever I want to build. Because I mean, all I've built so far is like the framework for what could be really cool. And then when I went on this long expedition the other day, I realized how much awesome stuff there really is if you just explore the game world as it gets generated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I spent so much time underground that I've missed most of it. Like, I stumbled across an old abandoned mine system, because the game actually generates villages and abandoned mines. And it already had carts. I mean, it already had cart tracks and stuff. I just put a mine cart on it and just rode it, and then it dropped off and I fell off a cliff. But that's fine. I survived. It's okay. But then I was stuck in a fucking hole. But it's just like all this stuff the game generates is really cool, and I actually really like it. So maybe I should just spend some time just walking around the world. I feel like I would probably gain more if I do that. What I've been trying to do is just build a big tower and then put a bunch of remotely operated torches in it so I could turn it on and off like a fucking lighthouse, because I thought it'd be awesome. And then I realized that my tower is so short I can't see it over all the trees in the forest, no matter how tall I build it. So it's totally worth – I've totally wasted all this time. So I built a house on this – so there's a tree that's literally like mountain size. Like it takes forever to get to the top. I managed to get up there, built a house on top of it. And now I can just look out over everything and go, "Ah, this is great." But the world is so huge that it takes me forever to find my base camp again. So it's basically just constant exploration and just finding new things and occasionally running for your life. It's good. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy just – it's not a great game per se, but it is a neat way to just kill time.
That's a great box quote.
Like just to relax. Okay. Like if you just want something to do to kind of chill out.
This game is actually super meta because, you know, like you've realized that while you were in your cave, you were missing out on the wonders of the world.
Yeah.
But while you're playing Minecraft, you're missing out on so much stuff.
There you go. But I'm only playing it at like midnight before I go to bed. So it's like I'm missing out on that much. It's not like I'm going to go out clubbing on a Wednesday night.
You're missing
night.
Letterman. That's okay.
Yeah, I can live without Letterman.
The world will go on.
Yeah, mm. I do think though that it's kind of a weird experimental of a game concept that maybe it could be done better, but I'm not sure you'd want to. Like, I just kind of like where the game is.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap up new business this week. As Carl mentioned earlier, I've been playing Night Sky, which just came out on the eShop this week. This is a game from Nicholas, not made by the Cave Story dude. It was published by Nicholas, our friend Tyrone. And Night Sky was originally announced as Night for WiiWare a long time ago. And the WiiWare version was canceled. It eventually came out on Steam and has been out on Steam for like a year or two, pretty long time. And eventually they announced that they were going to bring it to 3DS instead of Wii. And so it's finally out today. I've actually been playing it on Steam because I got it really cheap during the summer sale and actually saved it on purpose for this occasion because I wanted to play it closer to when it was coming out on eShop so I could talk about it for the show. And, you know, Night Sky is a really neat game. It looks and sounds awesome, and those are the best things about it. It's a game that's played from this kind of pseudo-silhouette style. You basically just control this black ball. It's just basically a circle on the screen, and it rolls left and right, and that's what it does. That's the game. It doesn't jump. It doesn't do all this other stuff. It's all physics-based. It's all about momentum, getting enough speed to ramp up over a gap and get to the other side, or getting on top of something and rolling the opposite way in order to roll it underneath you. And it just does a lot of really neat things with that. And the puzzles are very simple, mm-hmm. but they require some skill and some precision and maybe occasionally a little bit more luck than I would like. But for the most part, it feels very consistent. It feels like the ball almost always does what you expect it to do, which is really what you need out of a physics-based sort of puzzle platformer. Mm-hmm. And the game is really breezy. And I think for that reason, it's actually a much better fit for a handheld than it is as a Steam game. It really would be really good probably as like a smartphone game, except that you wouldn't want to play this with a touchscreen. I mean, it does require very precise digital control. On the PC, actually, you can only play it with the keyboard arrow keys. You can't even use an Xbox controller or anything like that. They want you to play it with literally left and right and a couple of buttons to put on the brakes or to speed up. And it's very simple and straightforward in that way. And I think for that reason, it's going to be a really good fit for the 3DS and for the eShop.
Yeah, I got to play the game for a very short while at E3. Tyrone had brought it, and the game has this neat, very subtle 3D effect. I think it was announced, you know, at the very beginning, this is not going to be 3D, but then they added it in, and it does look nice. I liked the simple puzzles, like very, you know, stuff like braking while you're on a trolley and letting, like, basically transferring your momentum to the trolley and right. then carrying from over there. And also there's some stuff with gravity, I think.
Every now and then they see the powers, the abilities that you have to speed up or to brake are inconsistent. So some levels you can brake, some levels you can't. Sometimes you can mm-hmm. speed up, sometimes you can't. And the most rare ability is to reverse gravity. And that does some really interesting things because you know, it essentially lets you fly because you can turn gravity on and off in such a way that you kind of stay suspended between the floor and the ceiling. But when you do that, you can't really control yourself left or right because you don't have anything to roll against. And so a lot of times what it means is that you have to roll and build up some momentum and then reverse gravity so that you keep moving forward even as you are kind of flying through the air. But then they may put an obstacle there, so you have to turn gravity back on to get under that obstacle and then turn it back off before you fall off the bottom of the screen. So they do some really fun things like that, and it just feels good. And I think that's the most important part of the game because it is so physics-based. The physics feel right. They feel predictable, and the controls are tight. And all that stuff is really important. Because of that, I really have enjoyed playing through the game. I think it has a pretty good amount of content, has a lot of levels, and the levels are really short. really short. A lot of them you can just roll through very quickly in just a matter of a couple of seconds. And some of them are purely cosmetic. They're just meant to show you something nice in the background, and they don't require you to do anything skillful whatsoever. You just roll from left to right and you get through the level. And those are just kind of like a little break. You know, it's just a chance for you to check out the scenery while you get ready to do the next level. But a lot of the little puzzles are pretty difficult, very skill-based. Some of them are very thoughtful, and you have to figure out, wait, why can't I do this? How the hell am I supposed to get over there? You know, how do I get this thing out of the way? And I've really enjoyed it. And there's also a so-called alternative mode. It's basically a hard mode that you can do after you beat the rest of the game. And it sort of remixes the levels and makes them more difficult. And, you know, so I have no problems recommending it based on the amount of content that's in it. And I think it's just it is in some sense kind of like a casual game in that it's just not very deep. There's not much persistence. You know, your abilities literally reset every level. So it's not about that. It's not about telling a story or anything. It's really just kind of like a really quick action game. But it's very fast paced. You can play very small amounts of it and then walk away and then come back and play another little bit of it. Or you can sit there and play it for, I've been playing it for 30, 45 minutes at a time. So I think it's very flexible. And because of that, I think it really fits well on a handheld platform. So, cool. I've been playing the PC version, but again, I as long as the port is pretty good and it sounds like it is, I think it's probably a really good choice, for 3DS on eShop. I
mean, you paid very little for it, but I think it's $10 on the eShop. Do you think it's a good value or?
I wouldn't have a problem paying that for it. I mean, I paid less than that, but I got it on some crazy Steam sale, you know, but I think mm-hmm. I think I have no problem with it being a $10 game. You know, I mean, I read Neil's review today and he gave it like a 6,
yep.
Which I is harsher than I would go for sure. And he kind of complained about being sort of trial and error based. And I wonder if that's just a product of Neil, you know, playing through the game pretty quickly, you know, trying to move on to the next thing, because I feel like the game, the ball really does what you expect it to do. And if you're going through tons of trial and error, you're either on one of the hardest levels in the game, because I've seen that a couple times where I really had to try a lot, but it resets you immediately. You have infinite lives. It's really not an issue. But for the most part, I find that if I just sit there and look at it for a couple of seconds, I can figure out what to do. And the controls and the physics are good enough that I probably only have to try it once or twice. So I don't think it's an especially difficult game. Trial and error makes it sound like there's a lot of randomness to it, and you do something and it may or may not work. And I disagree with that. I think it is deterministic if you're willing to pay attention and observe the way the level's put together. So I really like it. It's not amazing, but I think it's very good. Very good cool. little game. And the soundtrack, I have to mention, is fucking crazy awesome. It's very, very ambient, I guess you would say, in that there's not a lot of melody to it, but it uses a lot of really interesting instruments that you don't hear very much in video game music. There's some awesome saxophone, there's some string sections. It sounds a bit like the Braid soundtrack. I don't know if you guys remember that. I thought Braid had really cool music. It was all licensed stuff. Yeah. But but I really, really like the music in this game, and I think it fits the game very well because it feels kind of stripped down, much like the game. And yet mysterious and just kind of really charming.
Cool.
So the other game I've been playing a lot, because I was traveling last week, of course, spent a lot of time on planes and in airports, much more than I wanted to because of delays and things like that. So I ended up getting plenty of time to spend with Final Fantasy V Advance,
mm-hmm.
which I picked up Ooh. A couple weeks ago and didn't have time to get into right away. But I was looking forward to this trip as a chance to really dig deep into the only mainline Final Fantasy game that I had not played. I've played a little bit of 3 enough to know that I don't really care to play more of it. And I haven't beaten Final Fantasy II, but I've played several hours of it enough to know that I really don't care about playing the rest of it. It's by far the worst Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I'm really interested to know what you think of the cast of FF5.
Yeah, so the cast of characters in FF5, I didn't like very much at first, but I'm about 13 hours into the game now. I think I'm roughly a third of the way through the game, and they are growing on me. And the characters themselves are growing and developing over time. And this one, it seems like you, from what I can tell, you control the same four people throughout the entire game, which would, if true, if that holds true as I go forward, that would make it one of the most limited casts of characters in that sort of middle era of Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And even compared to things like Chrono Trigger, it's a very, very small cast of characters.
Definitely.
But they are very modular because of the job system. So the people are the same, their personalities are the same, and so you have time to get used to them and to learn more about them and to care about them. But their abilities are very, very much up to you, very customizable, and you know, you have this job system that I know that FF5 is kind of the origin of the job system, and it's the sort of one of the shining examples of it. But I've played it, the first time I tried it was in Final Fantasy Tactics, and then I've played a lot of it in the Dragon Quest games. DQ9 has a very similar job system. And, you know, it works really well here. It's one of the more simple examples of a job system that I played in an RPG, because you can only carry one ability from a different job to your current one. So it's not as customizable. I seem to remember, like in Tactics, you could create these really bizarre kind of mishmashes of character abilities. I feel like FF5 is a little more limited in that respect. But changing your job, it really changes the pace and the flow of the combat. It really changes how you have to use that character. And even though there's only four characters in the game, I've already got, I think, almost 25 different jobs that I can select from. So there's a ton of variety. You're not going to master all of them. So you really kind of have to just, and the game doesn't explain them very well to you at all. You get like one line of text explaining what a job does. So sometimes I get abilities that I don't even know what they do. I just have to use them and figure it out. I don't know which ones are good and which ones are bad. You know, I assume that they're all balanced in some way, but some seem more immediately useful than others. And you can change them at will. You know, just anytime you want, you go in the menu and you say, change your job. You don't lose anything. You can always go back to it and pick up where you left off and the experience and everything. So it's very easy, and it automatically optimizes your equipment whenever you change a job. So that makes it, you know, you can do it very quickly. It's not a lot of hassle. You don't have to spend 10 minutes in the menus every time you want to do it. So it really encourages you to experiment. And the job system has been a lot of fun. So I think one of the really weird things about playing FF5 after all these years of sort of lusting after it, being curious, but not curious enough to go spend a ton of money or to learn Japanese or to play a bad translation on an emulator. So now, you know, now that I've finally, yeah, and I could have bought this when it came out on GBA, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I just didn't. And at the time, I don't know why I didn't. I look back and I think, what was wrong with me? Why didn't I immediately go and get this? Because it is really good, really, really good. I mean, it's a 16-bit Final Fantasy game. What do you expect? I mean, the game before it and after it are two of my favorite games of all time. So I'm in this weird situation where I feel very nostalgic for this game, even though I've never played it before, because it looks exactly like FF4. And yet the characters and the systems in the world are very different. They're a little more sci-fi tinged, which I'm fine with. You know, FF6 went a lot more in that direction. But, you know, it's very alienating in that you start out and you don't really know anything about this world, and you kind of slowly uncover it as you go. The very first thing you do in the game is you walk up to a meteorite, which is already just a really interesting way to start out the game. And then later on, you find out where these meteorites come from and what are they really for and what are they doing to the world. So it does a nice mixture of the fantasy and the sci-fi stuff. And the story is pretty interesting so far. And I've just had a great time going through it. You know, I would say that in general, it feels fairly easy. I'd say it's similar to the original American version of FF4, which the Japanese call Easy Type.
Yes.
And I'm okay with that. You know, that's the version of FF4 that I love. So I have no problem with that. But I'm not having that much trouble with making it through the game. I'm not, you know, not really dying very much. I'm not having that much difficulty, even though I'm probably not using the most useful jobs. So I think it's good that it's easy, because it does give you a little more confidence in just kind of messing around and coming up with combinations of jobs that are fun to use, and not having to worry about min-maxing, you know, in order to just to survive. So I'm really having a fantastic time with it. The one other thing I wanted to mention about it is that I'm playing this on the DS Lite, which I believe is the largest screen that you can play a GBA game on other than your TV.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, probably.
So I had to go dig out my DS Lite. I wasn't sure exactly where it was. I knew that I still had one, but I got a little worried for a while because it took me a while to find it. This is my trusty old DS Lite, probably my favorite hardware ever. I think it's one of the best design systems ever, certainly one of the best design handhelds. I was trying to think, what was the last game I actually played on this thing? Probably Radiant Historia, like 2 years ago. You know, I dug it out and I just remembered how much I love the DS Lite, how awesome the D-pad is, how perfectly it weighs. You know, it's so much lighter than my 3DS XL that it feels almost flimsy in my hands because it weighs like a third as much as the 3DS XL. But I wish the GBA screen display was a little bit bigger because it doesn't really quite take up the whole screen. And I'd forgotten that there aren't really any, you can stretch it, but you can't really, change the resolution or anything. Right. So, but then I was like, well, you know, this is the biggest screen that I could play this on without plugging into my GameCube, which I don't really want to do that. I don't really want to hook up a GameCube and use the Game Boy player.
Yeah.
It kind of defeats the purpose, a little bit, but, I think this game looks really good, even though it's basically a Super Nintendo game running on a GBA cartridge plugged into my DS Lite.
It's basically trying to find as many ways to make this game look as crappy as possible as you can.
And yet it looks fine. It actually looks really good.
And it's not as bad as the when you're playing it on a PSP, you know, a Super Nintendo game turned into a PlayStation 1 game, adds the loading times and the glitches.
Yeah.
And then you blow it up. Screen.
But it also adds the Sony experience. Oh, we already mentioned that.
Wait, didn't he just describe the Sony experience?
Yeah, it's the punchline. Well,
yep.
I picked this up for $20. I got it on Amazon through one of the, you know, Amazon dealers or whatever.
Not a pirate copy?
Right, exactly. I mean, I had pretty good confidence that because I bought it, it was actually shit. It was actually redeemed through Amazon. Which meant that I got free shipping because I'm a Prime member. And it also means that I have a lot of customer protections by essentially buying it through Amazon. So I knew that if I got it and it was obviously a pirated copy or it didn't save correctly or whatever, then I could send it back and I wouldn't have any trouble getting my money back from Amazon. So I went that route. I think you go through eBay, it's a little dicier.
Oh,
you might want to look at the person's, rating, customer rating and everything. But it's not that hard to find a copy. $20 might seem like a lot for a GBA game, but, you know, it's fucking Final Fantasy. Like, it's an RPG. It's the kind of game that a lot of people will buy and then never resell. So the fact that you can get it for only $20, and this is the only really good, legitimate version that's available in English.
I'll say.
So I think if you're a Final Fantasy fan, this is definitely worth picking up. I have no problems recommending it. All right, guys, so we're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we've got a lot of Wii U to talk about. Stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
This week, we have a review of Professor Layton and the Miracle Mask on 3DS by Nate Andrews. Do you like puzzles? I like puzzles, and Layton has puzzles! Year after year. Good show, chaps. We also have impressions of the X-Troopers, or X-Troopers, however the hell you pronounce it, on the 3DS by Danny Bivens. Do we keep talking about X-Troopers to make our Western listeners feel jealous? Probably. Too bad, because we have yet another demo that's yielded yet another set of glowing impressions from the game Capcom is convinced we don't want.
We've also got a couple reviews here. First up, Art Academy, Lessons for Everyone on 3DS by Ariel Ruff. I'm not a gamer. When I use my keyboard, it's just to write a script to convince you to go read a review about a very good art tool and tutorial for the 3DS. We've also got Night Sky on 3DS by Neil. We just talked about this game, so go see what Neil thought of it.
We have a feature, Japan eShop Roundup by Danny Bivens. Another week, another sale pitch for AKB48 plus me. And yet Danny still doesn't have an import review. We also have a blog by Josh Max, the Kid Icarus Tournament. Josh got his Icarus on at Comic-Con and finally met his match.
You're a trooper for reading that out loud.
Really? Okay. Josh got his Icarus on and got his holy buns toasted.
You thought that was better than what I wrote.
It's more relevant.
It didn't rhyme. All right, we've got a preview for Just Dance 4 on the Wii U by Andy Gergen. No, you didn't just drop acid. It's Just Dance. Did you know they've already made 3 of these things? Actually, they made a lot more than that. Number 4 is launching with Wii U with such hits as Mr. Saxo Beat and Wild Wild West. Get hype.
Oh, God.
Finally, we have a feature called Agricultural Differences, A History of Harvests by Andrew Brown. The titles for these features just get better every week. Andrew traces the evolution of the Harvest Moon series. See what it was like to milk cows in 16-bit, 64-bit, 8-bit, Game Boy style, and in 3D. So you can check out all of this great original content along with the latest news. We got Nintendo Direct coverage, lots of stuff going on with Wii U coming out soon, and you'll find it all over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Word. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're going to talk about some Wii U hype. Because we got it.
Some
woo-hype. Well, I don't know that Carl does, but the rest of us have it. Carl, what is your hype level for Wii U? Do you give a shit about Wii U?
Tangentially, I guess.
like people you know give a shit about Wii U.
God!
It's one of those things where it's like, I know it's coming out. I know it's coming out soon. Technically, I mean, I could easily afford one. I could just go get one, but I just don't want to. And I think honestly, if they were launching with Pikmin 3, I probably would get it at launch.
Ah, okay.
But as it is, really the only thing that on that list that I want to play is Zombie U.
So it's fair to say that a Wii U is in your future.
Sure. Yeah. Eventually I'll get one.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Gotta play that Zelda. You're not a hater or anything, but you're one of the many people who is as yet unconvinced. Now, yes. I've heard a lot of people, it's interesting, the podcast coverage at least, which is primarily my exposure to the gaming media, has been really up on Wii U lately, primarily because of these press events where Nintendo is now getting a lot more hands-on time with members of the press, like on Weekend Confirmed, Totally Rad Show. Some of that stuff, those guys have been really digging the newer versions, and Guillaume had a similar event that he went to. Guillaume, what can you tell us about Wii U? I mean, you've played it before, of course. So did your opinion of it change, or did you learn anything new about Wii U from this event?
Well, I did get to play some of the new demos for Nintendo Land, and I was actually eager to try Balloon Trip. It's one of the single-player games, kind of like the Donkey Kong game, where you can compete for time and points. And it controls really, really well. I think it controls very, very cleverly. You just have, like, you see the whole action on the TV, and you see a zoomed in view on the tablet, I'm sorry, on the gamepad. And, you have complete control of the wind gusts by, basically sliding the stylus on the screen. You can just give it very, very subtle movements, or you can just blast through the whole screen by swiping, you know, one big swipe across the screen. And the, you know, like the rep was like, have you played this before? Because it felt really, really natural. It certainly felt better than trying to control, well, like the NES balloon fight.
You should have told her you made it. You know what? No, I did just play it. I made this game.
Someone once told me that at an arcade in my hometown, which is incredibly unlikely that the guy who made Galaga was playing it at the bowling alley.
You know what? I would tell... You know what? That's great. Every time I play Galaga now, being 26 years old, I made that game.
Well, he was really good at it. And I said, how'd you get so good? He said, I worked on this game. I made this game. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, as if Matthew Broderick would show up in your hometown.
Nicely done.
But yeah, like it just felt great. She wouldn't allow me to get past the third level, the You know, the game goes through morning, afternoon, and night, so the scenery keeps changing on you.
The third level was in the demo, but she wouldn't let you go past it?
No. Well, actually, like, the demo kind of ended at the end of the third day.
Okay.
But yeah, like, the scoring system is pretty simple, but it's effective. I mean, as long as you don't miss balloons, at some point they're going to increase in value, so they change color, and instead of getting 1 point per balloon, you get 2, 3, 4, up to 5, or at least that's how high I got. As a high score game, it seems to be pretty good. And I think that Neil tweeted at me that it's supposed to have online leaderboards. I really hope he's right.
Hopefully better than the ones in Mario for 3DS. But that's good that they're doing that. I hope they do it well.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And yeah, so the demo ended there and I wanted to see, like, it automatically ejected my Mii to the plaza where you can choose all of the games. But so the rep was scrambling to hide that from my view. You know, she was like pressing the plus button, trying to get to the menu that where you select games directly. But I did, you know, because I did pretty well at the game, I did unlock some sort of star that appeared above the arch where you would, that you would enter to access the game. So, this game has, its own type of achievements, I suppose.
I enjoy the press might learn something reaction there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to get her, like, to convince her to let me try the Octopus game or, what's the other one that we haven't played, yet?
F-Zero, we haven't played.
F-Zero, yeah, and she wouldn't let me. And, you know, like, I was bigger than her. I'm sure I could have taken her on, but I was...
Yeah. I'm sure fighting the press reps will do wonders for the site. Thanks, Guillaume. So why aren't we allowed any more Nintendo events? Oh, Guillaume killed a woman. Great.
It's okay. It was in Quebec. That's, cultural differences.
I was representing Nintendo World Report, so I thought, like, oh, yeah, I can't act like I would normally. that was fun, and I'm really eager to play more Nintendo Land. The other games I've played, I stood in line to play Scribblenauts. It ended up being the same demo that we saw at E3.
Oh, really?
So I was all eager to have a scoop, like, what does Mario do in this game? But he was not in it. I did try Mario, and that stand was unattended. You know, there was no Nintendo rep hovering over anyone's shoulder. So I grabbed the controller, and I was like, finally, maybe I'll have a scoop. Maybe I'll be able to see the overworld and explore it a little bit. But no, the only thing that you could select was the rush mode. So I did try that. It was pretty good, but it was mostly... The levels I've played were mostly the same levels that we've already played, except this time they're scrolling automatically. And so it was like I didn't really see anything new. All I did experience was that, yeah, it is pretty damn challenging. The more coins you collect, the faster the screen scrolls. And making it to the end is pretty difficult. You've got several lives, so at least... you know, you can see the end if even if you die once or twice. And I did because the levels, you know, like they're the same levels that you play normally. So I, you know, sometimes like I would kind of forget that it would be perhaps a bad idea to get inside that little, you know, nook where you could collect coins, because then there's no way to get back out if you can't actually make the screen scrolls. So that was a learning experience. So I don't know if I should be disappointed that it's the same levels or, you know, that they're not levels that were specifically designed for this type of gameplay.
That's the weird thing, because, you know, we've had auto-scrolling levels in Mario for a long time, but they've always been levels that are made for that. You know, I think back to, like, Mario 3, there's some stuff even in the first world. Trying to get 40 coins or whatever on that one level that auto-scrolls to get a P-Wing is just really hard to do.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that challenge. You could tell that they knew, they kind of had this in mind, and they knew that it would be hard to do, and they made it that way. I feel like, I don't know that auto-scroll is just kind of a thing that you can turn on for other levels and have it be fun.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that they're going that way. I wonder if that's just kind of a cheap, like a quick way to sort of create a new mode which is not really something you expect a Mario game to provide as like extra modes to play.
Yeah, I have my reservations about after playing it, but it does change completely the way that you would normally tackle these levels. So there's at least that.
I feel like there's still a lot that we don't know about Mario U.
Yeah, I want to see that overworld.
Yeah, I want to see some other power-ups too.
Yeah, I did not encounter a full-grown Yoshi. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, that's another big question. Yeah.
So these events they've been having though, like how often are they having them? Are they just randomly going to different communities where they have a decent number of people and just hosting them? Are these like the Cube Clubs or are these media only events?
Yeah, this was a media only thing. I have received an email. I think there's some sort of contest that you can enter if you're a Club Nintendo member, you know, like for the general populace to go there, for the norms to go to these events. But
the norms.
Wow. All right.
For you peons.
for the plebes.
I was going to say the plebes, sure.
But yeah, this was for the press. It was in a small room, and apparently they didn't send a lot of invites or not a whole lot of people showed up. I think the same people were then going to Toronto. And one of our writers, Tyler, went to that, and he said it was just packed. So, but yeah, it's the same people, you know, traveling. I mean, the Activision guy that I saw there was from Los Angeles, and you know, like they had one of the designers from Scribblenaut showing the game. So yeah, like they're getting around. Yeah, so I played the Nintendo Land Mario. I did spend couple minutes trying out Ninja Gaiden 3 Wii U. What's the name? What's the title?
Razor's Edge.
Razor's Edge.
Yeah.
Does it feel bad? Because, I mean, the original version of it is notoriously not good.
Well, not only have I not played Ninja Gaiden 3, I haven't played 1 or 2. But
they were just bad games.
Right. Well, the first two are supposed to be decent.
Yeah, I mean, the third one is just not good.
Right. I don't know. Like, I did play the demos for 1 and 2, and 3 seemed to play pretty much similarly to that. I think I remember reading that the PlayStation 3 and 360 versions had completely changed the way the game controls. But I can't say that the Wii U version felt different. And I did read that they kind of re-implemented the old controls in there. So that's good news for fans of that series. The demo was you played as the new character that you can play, the female ninja. And the Wii U, I don't think, really brought that much to the experience, except for a control stick that sits above the face buttons and that absolutely gets in the way of you trying to press them.
So it brought everything to the experience then.
Yeah, I think that will get some. That will take some getting used to.
You're talking about the Pro Controller?
No, I'm talking about the tablet. I was playing on
the
tablet.
Really?
Yeah,
the tableau.
Oh, okay, I've only played Ninja Gaiden 3 with the Pro Controller.
But
so
it's gonna have the same problem, right? The analog stick sits right above the X button, and sometimes you're trying to hit that X button, and your thumb will brush against the analog stick.
I've had some weird problems with button location in playing Wii U games on either controller because the layouts are similar. And, you know, I'm very hesitant to say that I'm concerned about it because I think it's a new layout that we've never experienced on any other system before. And I think it's just going to take time to get used to.
Yeah. But I think
we've become very set in our ways playing on other sort of standard control layouts, and it's not often that we're presented with something new.
Yeah, I understand that, and I understand that the more I'll play, the less I'll have to look at the controller to know which button I'm hitting. But if, you know, I think that most people will be perhaps going back and forth between the Wii U and the 360 or the PlayStation 3, so perhaps like they're never gonna get quite that comfortable with the new scheme.
I mean, I go between the Wii and the 360, and I'm not.
Yeah, but it's so completely different. I don't think there's any, you know.
Maybe.
I think more of it as the buttons being switched in the Mega Man Anniversary Collection for the GameCube.
Oh, for fuck's sake, don't even talk about that.
Okay, I won't. Although I just did. The one thing that it did bring, the playing on the gamepad, was that you have your move list always there, so you can glance down at it, and if you don't remember that pressing A 5 times is a different combo than pressing A 4 times, then...
Now you do!
Valuable information there on your... on your big screen.
Yeah, but it is an advantage that you don't have to actually pause the game to consult your list of moves. And I understand that the list scrolled down. So, like, I was really only looking at the basic combos because, you know, let's not get too ambitious here.
This seems like a game that you can probably play on the gamepad screen, though. Because it's, I mean, obviously, you know, it started on other platforms. This game's not really designed for Wii U, and it doesn't sound like it does a whole lot with the gamepad while you're playing.
You did have to press icons of the touchscreen to trigger like your Nimpo technique or things like that.
That's probably optional, though.
Yeah,
because the Wii U gamepad has as many buttons as any other controller, and that stuff was all done on the controller for the other versions. Yeah, I mean, you know, I know Ninja Gaiden 3 is considered a bad game by most people, but I know that Team Ninja has sort of hinted that they kind of want the Wii U version to be their sort of chance to redeem themselves and to do it right this time. So, you know, we'll see if they succeed.
Yeah.
But they do seem to care about working with Nintendo, and so maybe they're really putting some effort into it and trying to fix everything that was wrong with it.
Stupid.
Yeah, like I just judging from the demo, it did play like these action games usually play. It did not feel subpar. Like it felt exactly like, you know, those games usually feel. So they're probably on the right track.
Hey, good for them.
All right. So, Guillaume, I have some questions about going back to the event itself, and especially the way you were playing the games. Did they have you playing these games standing up?
They did. And that was kind of a problem with Balloon Trip, actually, for a while. Okay, like, I don't think I've read this from anyone else, but I feel like the gamepad was a little bit heavier than it was at E3.
Was it on a cable? It was attached?
It was attached, but I'm not sure if it was attached by a cable. Like, I think it was just, like, you know, so that we wouldn't take off with it. So, yeah, I think that what I suspected, that at E3, the gamepad did not contain the battery. That might prove correct. Like my wrist became a little bit tired after like having to hold the gamepad for a long time while playing Balloon Trip. So I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be an issue when you're playing at home. You're probably going to have the gamepad sitting on your lap most of the time, and
yeah,
I'm not worried about that.
It's not a very natural motion to hold something, to stand and hold something in your hand and write on it.
Unless you're a reporter in the 50s.
Yeah, exactly. And you're doing all that while you're in a phone booth, you know, talking to your editor back in New York.
Yeah.
Or you're transforming into Superman.
So, yeah, that kind of gets to something I wanted to talk about a little bit, which is that, you know, lately, now that I have a pre-order for my Wii U finally, thanks to Walmart.
All right.
I don't plan on buying anything else there except maybe a pro controller. I'm just going to download all my games. So I'm going to go there and buy only the system and then walk out, which will drive them crazy. But I do have that. And so now it's becoming, especially, you know, we're much less than a month away. And it's becoming more concrete in my mind. And I'm starting to wonder, what is it going to be like playing the Wii U in my home? I've played it before, but under very kind of abnormal conditions that are not very much like how you use it in the real world. So there's just a lot about the experience that we really don't know yet because these demo events that they've done are just not designed around showing you that part of the experience. It's more like the very fundamentals of here's the controller, here's how to use the controller.
Right.
But I'm kind of
look
more interested
at this.
Yeah, like I really am curious to find out what's the next level. Like what is it really like to own one of these, you know? And I wish there was a way they could do press events that were just a little more natural. Like how about a couch? You know, how about a couch where I can sit down and use the controller and it's actually wireless and you let me play this game for an hour and not just a 5-minute demo over and over. So that hasn't happened yet, and at this point, I don't know that that is going to happen before launch day. Mm-hmm. And that goes for a lot of these games, you know, really major games like Mario. They've actually shown very little of it. And maybe you could say, well, it's a new Super Mario Brothers game, so we kind of know what it's all about and what's in it. But, you know, there are indications that this one for Wii U might be significantly different than the previous games in the series, but we don't really know how far that goes because they've shown us really only about 3 levels of it ever.
Yeah.
Over the course of 2 years. So I still think there's really a lot that we don't know, and it's a little scary, you know, having committed to spending almost $400 on the system and not knowing all this stuff about it. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the fun of launch day, right? Yeah. A little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm not scared. I do want to play Nintendo Land very much, and I do want to play Mario very much. Speaking of the experience, that reminds me, I forgot to say that this time I paid a little bit more attention. I actually looked at the gamepad screen while playing Mario instead of the TV. And maybe it was just a matter of, you know, having to adjust to the smaller size of the screen or something. But I felt like I was dying a whole lot more. And, I don't think there was any noticeable lag. But it was kind of in the back of my mind the whole time I was playing. But maybe I was just trying to make myself feel better for failing at the rush mode. The levels were hard. Like, when you're getting pushed through them that way, I'm looking forward to see how well people can do in that.
Last time I played a Wii U was E3 2011, which is a very different animal than what they currently have out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a very odd, like, proto system. I mean, it really was a prototype they basically had out there. I mean,
I would say almost mock-up. Like, you know, the more that we learn about what's actually inside the gamepad, it's clear that most of that stuff was not in the controllers that we played last year at E3.
No, I mean, the only reason I wouldn't agree with the mock-up language is that it technically worked. Like,
yeah.
Like, it could be turned on and you could press buttons on it. I mean,
but there was a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. But I mean, at the very least, it was a physical thing you could technically hold.
Oh, yeah.
More so than just like, this is what we think one will look like.
Yeah, it wasn't a mold of what the controller will be like.
Here's a generic controller mock-up.
Yeah.
So I guess we could discuss this as one of the happenings, but I've actually had a chance to play one now because they've set up their displays at most Best Buys at this point.
Oh, wow.
Now, what's annoying about it is the only demo they have, singular, is they have this weird navigation menu that I really hope has nothing to do with the primary navigation system of the console. But it's just like a list, and you just scroll through it sideways of icons.
Ooh.
And it's basically a bunch of games lined up, and you get play demo or view video. And every single one... Play demo is grayed out, except for Rayman. Now, this at least appears to be the E3 demo.
Rayman Legends, which is not even a launch title.
No, won't even be out this year.
It's not even coming out until next year.
Yeah, but I was, you know, I haven't played Rayman Legends. I played the godforsaken Game Boy demo, DS demo. But it looks with the tiny, tiny resolution. But this is my first chance to play this game, so I'm like, all right, you know what? I'll give it a shot. I went to Best Buy to do two things. Get the 999 sequel, which of course I didn't have. And to...
Is that out?
It is.
Yep. The 3DS game?
Yeah.
Wow.
And to play Wii U. And so I got to do one of the two, so I'll take it. But so I get there and I nobody's around playing it, but they've got in their console section, they've replaced most of the Wii paraphernalia with Wii U branded paraphernalia that is exactly the same thing. So your Wii remotes are actually now Wii U Wii remotes with little stickers that say compatible with Wii, which is a mind trip.
Sure, yeah.
This controller, originally designed to work with the system, is compatible with that system, just in case you were curious. It is like mind-altering levels of Crazy Town stuff. I mean, look at it like, of course it's compatible! It's built for it. So you just shake your head and go, all right, whatever. Whatever the fuck you want to do, Nintendo.
That's kind of how I feel about, like, fast food restaurants where they say their hamburgers are made of beef. Yeah, no shit. It's important. I fucking hope so.
Information. But, so I'm sitting there going, like, all right, whatever. I'll do – I could deal. And so I go through the whole process. I navigate all the menus. I get annoyed that there's no option to play anything but Rayman. But I deal with it. I play Rayman. And this is the same, like I said, this is the E3 demo that I've never seen. I actually thought it was kind of an interesting demo to show, because what they've done is, if you remember, the E3 demo is multiplayer.
It's two player. Yeah.
The same one from the demo where the person has the Wii remote and controls the fly thing. And what I found was interesting was, if you didn't have someone to play with, although it was hooked up to go two player, it actually went ahead and let Rayman be self-controlled.
So wait, like the AI was controlling Rayman?
Yeah.
So you're controlling Murphy, the bug.
Yeah. Yep. So you start the level by letting Murphy out, and then you control him, and Rayman will just stand there until you clear platforms to knock out of his way. So when you're playing the stage where he's in the giant wheel and you have to spin him around so he doesn't die, if you jerk him around too much, you will kill him. So you probably shouldn't do that. But besides that, yeah, it actually feels surprisingly good considering it's just Murphy. But I do wonder if that's going to be, playable over any extended period of time. It feels kind of hollow. But I thought it was an interesting way to show off how the gamepad worked, because until I started playing that mode, people more or less just walked past the Wii U display. But once I started playing that mode, people stopped and asked what it was. And a disturbing number of people, going back to our conversation from last week, did not understand this was a new system.
Yeah.
And most of them asked, is that just something I attached to the Wii? I'm like, no, it's not. It's a new system. And I was surprised that once I explained that, most of them sort of shrugged it off and said, yeah, I understand. Like, they didn't.
By the way, this is a big reason Nintendo's not selling standalone gamepads.
Mm. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
If you want the gamepad, you have to buy the console with it. As absurd as that sounds, that is a legitimate concern.
Well, they would have to put a huge sticker saying this is not compatible with the Wii.
Right. And you not never want to say something. You never want to say something is not compatible unless you're selling an Apple product. But yeah, I mean, they basically just said, like, they sort of just accepted, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like, it didn't really seem to bother them at all that it wasn't. Uh-huh. I expected there to be more negative reaction to that. I mean, it was universally asked, but they didn't really seem to care once it was explained.
Yeah, all these people just said, oh, that's okay. I have $300 in my pocket, so it's not really a problem.
Yeah, we didn't discuss price. but I was actually really impressed with that I walked with. It's really – I mean, like, I know it's a beautiful game. I've seen video, but to actually see it in person and hear it and that stuff, it's a really beautiful game. It's really impressive. And, of course, it's not coming out this year because, of course, that would be too easy. But I'm really happy. And I really hope they start putting more games in it. But it still never answered my question of how do you sell this thing for all the other stuff it does, which is what we talked about last week.
You sell it by putting someone like James in the store to answer these questions that people
I know!
Have.
That's what you have to do at this point. I mean, there was no mention of any of the other functionality of the Wii. No mention of the TV system, no mention of anything. Effectively, it didn't exist. All that this thing does is play games. And that makes no like not even I mean it had its own dedicated kiosk. It's a huge setup. They could have put copy discussing the various functionalities of the hardware. They just didn't.
But they do upgrade those demo stations. They change the software that's on them, every so often, and they change the literature that's there. So
yeah, I mean they do, but I mean it feels like this stuff should have been on there at the start.
Yeah.
But like, this is what it can do. I would expect that once the TV ads start airing, you're going to see people more interested, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. It's just a question of how do you – this is what we discussed last week. How do you cover all the crap the system can do in a TV ad? And yeah. I'm not sure you can. I mean, it just does a ton of – it's very anti-Nintendo in that way. It's not just a game system. It's a game system plus – 8,000 other things we've decided to put into it.
And even as a game system, it's kind of this multi-headed beast.
Yeah.
That does a lot of weird stuff that's kind of hard to explain.
Yeah, it feels very, I mean, the Wii U, having experienced it now firsthand and having, you know, worked on a site where it's covered regularly, I mean, it feels very much influenced by lessons learned on Wii. You know, they know, you can see with TV, you can see that they know they were the primary mechanism Netflix on demand is currently accessed by the majority of consumers, or the plurality of consumers. They understand that. So they have built a system, they have an amazing Netflix interface.
Yeah.
I know that seems, it seems really trivial, but they do. The Netflix interface is amazing.
Which is awesome. If it's better than PS3, then I will start using it on my Wii U.
Yeah, I sat down today to watch some Netflix, and I had to update my system on the PS3.
Oh, God, so you so it's still going?
The Wii U can't come soon enough.
It can't come soon enough because Guillaume's PS3 update will be done sometime after the launch.
Oh, that's funny. So I wanted to talk, and this gets to James's comment a little bit, I think, but there was a recently an Iwata Asks interview that went up that talked about the Wii U hardware specifically. And I think there was one about the guts of the console. It talked a lot about fans and heat sinks and stuff. I didn't read that one because I don't really care.
I care, but I'm a nerd. What can I say?
Yeah, there was one about just the gamepad, and they talked to some of the hardware designers who created the gamepad and all the technology that goes into it. And I found this endlessly fascinating. I kind of started reading it just on a whim and could not believe how incredibly complicated the gamepad is and how incredibly difficult it was to develop. And reading this interview gave me such a greater appreciation for what the controller really is. And I think it, you know, I went from, and I think collectively, all of us went from amazement at the Wii U concept last year when they first showed it at E3. And, you know, getting to try it ourselves, it was like, wow, this is just really crazy. And you know, what are they going to do with this? And then over the next year, we didn't see it. You know, they went into hibernation. And when it finally came back at E3 this year, you could tell that the hype died down a lot over this
thing. Right, because, I mean, I remember being at E3 last year, and it was, I mean, it was a topic du jour. I mean, it was,
yes,
like, people covering other systems exclusively were talking about it.
Oh, yeah. You know, because it just seems so audacious pack in a tablet with every system and to make that an integral part of the console. And, you know, that you have to keep in mind that was not long after the first, you know, after the first iPad was sort of really picking up steam and becoming huge. And so this really captured the imagination. It seemed like, wow, Nintendo's really like on the front of the wave here. You know, they're doing something that's really advanced and surprisingly technological coming from them. And I think by the time they reemerged with Wii U this year and showed the new version of the gamepad and they showed actual games on it for the first time, I think a lot of that hype had died down. And I think part of it is that tablets have become not nearly as flashy and exciting as they were back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot more of them. A lot of people own one. A lot of people own more than one. You can get $200 tablets that are bigger than the Wii U screen now, that do a lot more things, because they're media devices and not game systems.
Right.
And I think that had a lot to do with it. And all of a sudden it's like, well, it has a tablet, but now the focus became what it doesn't do. Well, it doesn't have multi-touch and it's not HD and it, you know, it has joysticks, but it doesn't have all this other stuff and you can't take it very far away from the system before it loses connection. It doesn't really do anything by itself. And then we found out, oh, you can't play virtual console games on it. You can't play WiiWare games on it, stuff like that. And it became this kind of like cycle of, well, the controller seems to get less and less impressive as we learn more about it. And then this Iwata Ask interview comes out, and it made me totally rethink what the controller actually is and what it actually does. Because I think for the first time, I started to appreciate the fact that this controller really is not a tablet. It doesn't work like a tablet. And we've kind of always known that academically, but I think it never really hit home until I read this article.
We spoke about this a couple weeks ago, where we basically equated it closer to, it's more like the same interface of a 3DS than a tablet.
But I've seen a lot of articles from different websites just saying what you just said. Like, this is not a tablet. This is a controller with a screen on it. And the point seems to get lost on a lot of people. And they're just like, oh, you're just arguing semantics. It's a fucking tablet. Yeah, people are rude on the internet.
It's really not. It looks like a tablet. I mean, it has the same form
It'll
factor.
Fool you.
But it really works very, very differently. And it, well, in reading about the wireless technology and all the difficulty they had in getting it to work the way that you expect it to work, in some ways I feel like what the Wii U gamepad does is probably more impressive technologically than a tablet, because a tablet doesn't have to bounce these signals back and forth. You know, it doesn't have to deal with latency between what you do and what you see. It doesn't have to, you know, transmit all this video across a local connection and then, you know, compress it and decompress it and get it back and all that stuff. And it sort of made me think, man, they really put a lot more work into this than I really gave them credit for. And on top of all that, they actually had to make it a controller, which no tablet is a good controller. So the fact that it has these joysticks and buttons, they had to make it something that you can hold a few different ways, you know, at different angles, different orientations. You can grip it in different places. Sometimes you kind of put your hand under it and use a stylus. Sometimes you hold it by both sides and it's more like just a giant controller with this screen in the middle of it. I don't know. Maybe this just sounds really simplistic and kind of trivial, but at reading about it, I started to feel like I was gathering this whole new appreciation for what the system really is accomplishing. And then it made me realize why I haven't picked up on all this and why I haven't fully appreciated it up till now. And it's because of the way Nintendo's been doing these demos. Just like I said, they have you playing standing up, which is very uncomfortable, and they have you playing with a tethered system. So you get the sense that things are being passed back and forth, and the magic of this thing being wireless and doing all this crazy shit
wirelessly.
Yeah,
it's totally lost on you.
It really doesn't rub off on you because it's literally not wireless when you play it in these demos.
Do you think that people who have not read the Iwata asks are going to understand the difference or between the gamepad and tablet, or perhaps more...
Guillaume thinks the average consumer is fucking stupid.
No, but I mean, like, when for instance, when Sony shows their PS Vita and PS3 connectivity, do you think that consumers are going to be able to tell the difference between that and a Wii U?
No, they're going to say the Vita and the connectivity cost $300 more.
Well, so, you know, before I read this interview, I would have said that people will think these are the same. You know, I would have said that the stuff that Xbox is doing with Smart Glass and the stuff that Sony's doing with connecting Vita to PS3, it really does undermine, you know, all the effort that Nintendo's gone to create something original, because these other companies are sort of piecing together pieces of tech that already exist in order to mimic what Nintendo has created a dedicated system to pull off. Reading the interview with Iwata and the people who designed all this stuff, I'm pretty sure that those experiences are going to be fucking awful compared to Wii U. In terms of the data compression and the latency, trying to use this remote screen as an input device for your console and having those images go back and forth is not going to work well, because those systems weren't designed to do that. And the Wii U hardware is very, very specially custom designed to do that. And I think, I'm guessing here, but I think the experience will be obviously different.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone who picks it up, they're going to say, well, the Wii U works and these other ones really don't work. And I think that I don't think you have to have read the interview or understand the technology to see that one just does what you expect it to, and the other one is kind of this awful, buggy, laggy mess.
Well, I think perhaps the day that a PS3 and PS Vita user has to update both systems to get at the same time to get to play them, we'll realize what the difference is.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue.
I do like that Guillaume implied that that would only take a day.
So yeah, that was just kind of a revelation that I had this week, which is weird, you know, having played Wii U on multiple occasions and being sort of acquainted with it for a pretty long time now, to have this kind of weird turnaround on my appreciation of it at such a very late stage, I thought was exciting, but at the same time, a kind of an indictment of the way Nintendo's handled the demo experience of this, the way that they've marketed it and the way that they've shown it to us, I think is really a disservice to what the system is really capable of.
Which, if you go back about 2 years to when we first heard about this, about the Wii U, it really has been about 2 years at this point. Mm-hmm. It's sort of what I was initially saying. I was like, this is really fucking forward of them. Yeah. Like, this is like, I felt like it was being a bit underplayed how over the top they were trying to be at this point. It's like, this is really damn complicated. Are you sure you want to do this, Nintendo? And, yeah, they did apparently. I don't know that it was a good idea, but they did it. So we'll see. I mean, I've never played a Wii U, and I don't think any of us have ever played a Wii U that wasn't tethered to something at this point. And I think the effect is going to be much more significant when we're not. When we're free. Because even now, even the unit I was playing today, I was convinced this is smoke and mirrors. And it may have been. It may have been that that demo unit is smoke and mirrors. I don't know. I don't know if it is. I don't know if it isn't. But in my mind, I couldn't shake the fact that this is smoke and mirrors.
And you know why? Because it's too good to be true.
Right.
And that is a huge card up Nintendo's sleeve. When you play the real thing in a realistic setting and you really get it to its full potential and it still feels too good to be true, that's when you know they've done something amazing. And so that's really kind of why I'm starting to get more and more hype for this thing, because I think the system is actually way cooler than we've been led to believe.
So Nintendo themselves has managed to downplay expectations for their own system.
Imagine like, that.
They're like a political candidate.
But also there's like the first crop of software kind of probably doesn't take full advantage of the potential that's there, because we've been seeing games that use the screen as a map and stuff like that, and it just it doesn't feel that special.
I agree. The implementation in this early crop of games is not that imaginative. Wrapping up this segment, I wanted to kind of quickly revisit a topic that we talked about a few months ago, actually, about the launch titles that we're thinking about picking up. Now that, James, do you have a pre-order?
I am number one on a GameStop's list of once they get the next batch in.
Okay. It's more or less a pre-order. You might even get it on launch day, I guess.
Yeah.
Depending on their order. But
right.
So now that the system is becoming a reality for us, I wanted to revisit what games do we really think are gonna be out. And Guillaume's played more of the actual launch lineup than James or I have. But we're starting to read more about the stuff that's coming out, and I'm starting to reevaluate the games that I'm, likely to download in the early days. So I thought this might be worth going back to. But I want to start with Carl, because we haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah.
you have not played Wii U, right?
So I have not. When I get the system, it'll be my first time playing it.
Well, unless you go to a Best Buy right now.
Yes, indeed. Which I don't think I've been to a Best Buy in like 2 years.
It's been,
been waiting it out. You're asking me which launch games am I excited about?
Obviously not that many, because you're not planning to pick it up at launch. But when you get a system, what do you think will be the first games that you pick up for it?
I mean, as I said, Pikmin is a big is a big thing for me. I mean, when Pikmin comes out, I will have either bought a Wii U before then, or it will be the game that makes me buy it for the system. Mm-hmm. That game to me is, I think, just going to be endless fun. I'm really, really excited for it. Liked the first Pikmin a lot. The second one, not so much, but... I'm really excited to play the third one on Wii U. Zombie U, as I mentioned, is probably the most interesting looking game of the launch crop, or crap, as James put it.
we'll see about that game.
I agree with James here, because, I think Zombie U is really interesting. It has a lot of really cool ideas, but I'm very dubious about whether it's actually going to pull together into being a good game overall. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ones that I'm really waiting on reviews.
Yeah, sure. It really has. I mean, it could be really good, or it could be a freaking awful disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a Ubisoft first-person shooter, and that's all
It is a Ubisoft launch game.
Well, that too. That
indeed. Too.
But I want to believe. I want it to be good. I mean, the indications are there, but...
I want to believe!
It's fighting against a lot of factors.
Indeed. Cloudberry Kingdom was pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah. The download, the eShop game.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a system selling game, obviously, but if I got a Wii U, I would definitely be getting that game.
Right. Have you played the PC version?
I have not. I don't think there's
the beta.
A Mac version.
It's not finished on PC either, but it's in beta.
Yeah, I'd love to play it. I mean, if it comes out on Mac after the PC release, I'll definitely pick it up there. Or iOS eventually. But I mean, if I had a Wii U, that would definitely be on the soon to buy list. Yeah, ultimately I just think the launch crop is okay looking. It's one of those things where if I was still writing for the site vigorously, then I would probably pick one up. But as it is, it's like, you know, I'm not gonna make the same mistake I made with the 3DS, which was I got caught up in the launch hype, all those freaking staff emails of everyone saying, oh, I got mine, and I was like, alright, I'll go get one. Not gonna happen this time. Not gonna happen. I'm gonna be smart, wait it out. When the games are there, I'll buy one.
Yeah, before Liberation Maiden today, what was the last thing you played on your 3DS?
When was the last time I was on the show?
wow.
Yeah, months and months
that's
ago.
That's brutal. I mean. Yeah,
that's what I figured.
Yeah.
So, all right, fair enough, man. Yeah. So, Guillaume, after your recent experience playing some of this stuff, Call of Duty and Ninja Gaiden and, you know, What's your feeling? What do you think you're going to be picking up here at launch?
Well, I think I already said that I was planning on only getting Nintendo Land and Super Mario. This is the new me. I plan on only buying games that I know I can handle, you know, and actually wait until I'm done with them before buying more.
What? Because...
I know. Like this has not been my MO in the past. I fear that if you guys knew the truth, the Lindemann syndrome might have a new name.
You have not seen what I have seen in the House of Lindemann.
Yeah. But beyond that, right now, most of the launch titles, I guess, are a little bit out of sight, out of mind. But amongst the demos that I did try this week, I think finally I did get to try Zombie U. And I think I liked what I played. Like, it's definitely, sure, okay, it's a first-person shooter by Ubisoft, but it's also survival horror, you know, and it's not in a bad way. I mean, like, doesn't seem to be any obtuse puzzles, and I didn't have to pour acid on some hand to release a medallion to open a door. So that's a plus. And also, if you try to, you know, go in swinging, you're gonna get killed.
Good.
So the encounters with the zombies are pretty meaningful, and, I like what I played, but the demo, I think it was the same demo as at E3, so it was pretty rough. If it's still that rough when it releases, shame on Ubisoft, because there were lots of problems with clipping, and I would keep hitting this zombie with a cricket bat, and it would constantly just stumble backwards through the wall, and, you know, as if it were Kitty Pryde or something.
Ominous.
Yes, and beyond that, I'm probably going to load up on eShop cards and Runner 2, definitely, and any other good games that come out on that service.
There's some really hot-looking stuff coming out on eShop, like around launch even. Like,
yeah.
That's like bring your system home and start downloading stuff, which is the greatest news to me ever.
I can't wait.
That's what I want to hear. Yeah,
I can't wait.
James, what about you? I mean, you're picking up a system virtually at launch. What are you thinking for games?
I'm kind of in a weird place. Like, there's a couple games I'm interested in. I actually was really, really into Wonderful 101 until it got booted into 2013.
Yeah,
which is sad. I'm actually somewhat interested in Epic Mickey 2 because I haven't spoken about it on the show, but I got the original for dirt cheap. It felt like the N64 platformers that I love, but ultimately recognized had issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like the old Rare ones. Like,
I'm sorry. Can I talk about the Epic Mickey 2 demo that I did?
Yeah, if you've got pertinent information, by all means.
Okay, so I did try it for the Wii U, and I was assured there were severe slowdown problems. No, but this was an old build, and the guy was telling me that it was already solved and. The version that they were
take our
working
word for
on.
It, please.
No, but it was very, very bad. They would never release it that way.
Okay.
I'm sure. So it looks good, and the problem is playing with the regular gamepad with two analog sticks, doesn't feel as special as the original did. It doesn't feel as good to point and shoot, because now you're kind of dragging cursor around.
Right,
and,
you're not pointing anymore.
No. And
well, don't you think they're supporting the Wii remote pointer?
They are.
Nunchuck?
Yes, they are. And in two-player mode, that's going to be very handy. You can also play it single-player. You can use the Wiimote and Nunchuck. But good. If you do it in single-player, the gamepad basically turns off. So basically you're not really playing a Wii U game at that point. You're playing the PlayStation 3 version.
Right. Well, the screen turns off.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't be able to use it anyway if you're holding the Wii remote Nunchuck.
Right. But, I was hoping that maybe you could have it, sitting next to you, showing you the map or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I see.
But
yeah.
No, it's going to be, awesome. You're going to be playing an HD version of the Wii game.
Awesome. Maybe also interested in Darksiders 2. I haven't played it, so, yeah, I mean, to me, it's a lot of games, maybe some catch-up I need to do. I'll be getting Nintendo Land with it. Maybe Assassin's Creed 3. I played the first game and liked it enough, but found the kept jumping to sci-fi stuff to be really discontinuous with the rest of the game. And I was just like, just give me a game actually set in this time period, because it's cool enough on its own. I'm kind of in there. One game I do have a question about, though, and I wouldn't be buying it for myself, but I might be buying it for if I have other people around. Has anybody ever actually played ESPN Sports Connection? Because it looks like Wii Sports. Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Is it any good?
It's a Ubisoft game. Okay. But,
good start.
Actually, it did remind me of Wii Sports in a good way. And I played at E3. It didn't even have the ESPN name on it
right.
back then.
Yeah, I didn't think it had
that baseball before. And golf were the only two sports they were showing. But I wrote some very positive impressions of it, and I thought that the ideas that they had for using the gamepad were very clever. Some of the more interesting uses of the controller that I saw from anything at E3.
So it now has soccer, football, baseball, tennis, golf, and karting.
As a mini game collection, you have to wonder, are two of these really bad and two of these really good, and the rest are kind of mediocre?
Right.
They haven't shown the other modes in the game, so we can't really say. But what I played of it, I thought was really cool. The baseball game I thought was fantastic, because you draw your pitches on the screen.
Nice.
So you can make it do all kinds of crazy shit, And I just thought that was great.
Yeah, I see.
And it looked good. It felt good. Yeah, I was pretty impressed by it.
Yeah,
actually.
To me, because I guess I didn't connect this to the Sports Connection, because the ESPN branding overrode the rest of it. I'm curious, if this game turns out to be good. It might be a game to get just when I have people over during the holidays.
Yeah, and there is no Wii Sports yet for Wii U, so it really does fill that niche.
And Nintendo Land doesn't really, from what I've seen. It's a different
animal.
It's
very different. Yeah, Nintendo Land is very different.
Yeah, so I mean, to me, it's sort of pick and choose in the launch window, but if stuff comes out later, I'll be much more engaged.
Very interesting. So potentially three Ubisoft games for James at launch.
That's fucking mental. That's by the way, the odds that I buy any of those games is 20% at this point. And the odds that any of those games are good is 30%. So
oh gosh. I'm more optimistic than you are on them, but for me, I'm getting Nintendo Land with the premium and then, or the deluxe, and then I'm going to go home and immediately download Mario. I've decided that's how I want to get it. I don't really want to give Walmart my money. I'd rather give it to Nintendo. And I don't care about having a disc for that game ever. So, I'm going to do that. Also, like Guillaume, we'll be buying a lot of eShop stuff because there's just a lot of awesome looking stuff coming out for it, hopefully on launch day. And then everything else, I think, is kind of wait and see for me. For instance, I am would very much like to play Assassin's Creed 3 on Wii U, but I'm waiting to see if that's actually a good version of it.
Right.
And if not, I can easily go back and get it on Steam or PS3 or whatever. I have lots of options there. But I'd be very happy to play that on Wii U if that is actually a good version. And we're not going to know that until at least launch day.
Sure.
Because, We just have to wait for reviews on that one. Zombie U is very, very much, you know, we've kind of already talked about that, but I'm hopeful for it, but I also have serious doubts about it, and I'm waiting to hear more about it. And the other one for me, this might surprise you guys, but I thought at E3, I thought Call of Duty Black Ops 2 looked awesome. I saw a demo of that, and I thought, wow, they are really trying this time. Really trying. And I don't say that facetiously.
I've heard that from more than just you, though. I mean, I've heard that from multiple sources. So I'm interested in the same sort of way that you are. But it's just kind of like, how much wait and see do I have to do before I say, yeah, okay.
You know, I mean, look, it's Call of Duty. I have a pretty good idea that it's going to be a high-quality version of the game. And the demos have been very much like, look, this looks really good. They're doing some cool stuff with the gamepad. Not earth-shattering, but they look like they're actually putting effort into it. And I don't care about my online list of friends on Xbox, so I'm perfectly happy to pick up and move to a different platform with that series.
This might seem kind of cheesy, but the version on Wii U might not have as many people who know every single little detail of how to be really overly powerful at that game. Because, I mean,
so maybe it'll be a more level playing field for me.
Because to me, the reason I don't play those games online is that I can't. I physically cannot play them. I mean, I just get annihilated. It's just not fun.
And yeah.
Maybe.
There's something to be said for that for sure. And you have the option to play it with pointer control. You can play it with the Pro. You can play it on the gamepad and use the big map and everything. So there's just, it seems very full featured. It sounds like a really good version of the game. And I am interested in the game itself because of what I saw at E3. So
good for them.
I might be picking that up. One of the big questions for me is, am I going to be able to download these third party games? We don't really know that yet.
And it comes down to the developer, doesn't it? Or the publisher, Nintendo.
To the publisher. And you know, especially having my deluxe set with my whatever that cash back system is, which Nintendo still has not given any detail in America.
Oh, God, no.
On how that system works, even though the system comes out in 3 weeks. But, you know, with that in hand, I would be very happy to download those games rather than go out and pay $60 for them at a store. So, I will do that if given the option. Otherwise, I might, you know, wait a couple weeks, play through Mario, play some Nintendo Land, and then go and pick up something to get me through Christmas. So,
yeah.
All right, guys. Hope everybody enjoyed hearing a lot of Wii U talk. I don't know what we're going to do next week, but the week after that, we will not have a regular episode because we're doing the telethon. So before we go, I wanted to go over a few of the details of the telethon because we have Carl here and he is helping to organize it and plan it. And there is a lot of action going on behind the scenes.
Sexy action.
But we have some really big plans and there's a lot going on here. So I wanted to just sort of remind everybody because it is coming up very soon. There's only one more episode of RFN before the telethon happens. So I want to take that opportunity to just remind everybody that it is happening on November 10th. That's a Saturday. It starts at noon Eastern and we'll be going for hopefully several hours. So hopefully, you know, no matter where you are in the world, you will be able to participate in at least part of it. And you really do want to be there for the live event if at all possible. It's just it's a much different experience than listening to a recording of it 3 days later. Very, sure. Very different experience.
Odds are if you get there early enough, you can call in and be on the show.
Absolutely. You can talk to us, you can win prizes. We're working on a prize list right now and figuring out what we can offer. But there will be some good stuff. There will definitely be some t-shirts. I think we can say that for sure.
Yeah.
But there will be probably games. There will probably be maybe hardware, maybe some swag, some kind of really cool like collectible stuff. I don't know yet. We're still working on all that. Working on some guests, but we can say, as we announced on the Famicast, which you might have already heard by now, that the 8-4 guys are going to be coming on again this year. And that was one of my favorite things that happened last year. That was so cool.
Such a good show.
So they're going to be joining up with Famicast with Danny and maybe some other people from Japan. And they're going to talk about Japan gaming stuff. So I'm really excited about that. If you don't listen to 8-4 Play, it is one of the best gaming podcasts for sure. And just very, very excited to have those guys participate. We've got a lot of other stuff coming up too. I can't talk too much about the other guests. We're still trying to confirm people and figure out who's going to be able to make it. But I can't say John Lindemann will be there for the telethon. I don't know if he's going to be on the show next week, But he has told me that that he will be around for the telethon. So you can look forward to that as well.
Or dread it, depending on your position.
He will he will do his annual rendition of the DK rap.
Oh boy. No, we need to go beyond that. We need to find something new, some new frontier.
Yeah, we need to go beyond that, as in get beyond the point where the DK rap exists.
Yeah. No, we need to find something new for John to desecrate. On a sadder note, I just want to get this out there so people aren't surprised by it, but I talked with Greg over email, and unfortunately he's not going to be able to come this year. Just didn't work out, and he's really sad about that, but he sends his love and support. I know a lot of people were requesting and hoping that Greg would pop up for the telethon, and unfortunately we can't make that happen, but trust me, that has only motivated me to make the show even more awesome to make up for that fact. So you can rest assured that I am trying my best to do that with a lot of help from people all over NWR staff and Carl too. So just wanted to remind that and get everybody excited for it. And want to let you know the donation box is up and running at the event page right now. Of course, there'll be a link in the show notes for this episode if you haven't already bookmarked it. But you should bookmark that page. That's where the chat room and the live audio stream will be, and that's where everything will be going down on November 10th. But you can go there now and go ahead and donate if you're worried you might forget, or if you just want to go ahead and start supporting the show. It is kind of nice to see ahead of time, you know, that we're at least going to be on for the first 2 or 3 hours. That has been very reassuring in past years.
The first year especially. You're like, is this going to go really wrong?
Yeah, when I've spent hours setting up a very special guest to appear on hour 4, and we're not really sure if we're going to get there or not, it's very worrisome. So I always encourage people to donate early. And it helps, I think it sort of helps encourage people to participate because they see that other people are doing it.
Indeed.
And finally,
it's peer
most
pressure.
Importantly of all,
peer pressure for the kids.
Yeah, peer pressure, exactly. And finally, it's for a good cause. But finally, most importantly of all, whether you can donate or not, what we really need is for everyone's help promoting this, spreading the word. Please tell your friends, tell anybody you know who likes Nintendo, who might be interested in this kind of thing. If you're a member of online communities, you know, WoW clans, message boards, whatever, please let people know, because the more people participate, the better the event is and the more opportunity we have to raise money for this wonderful charity. So that's the end of my spiel. Carl, did you have anything you want to add to that?
Folks, it is live radio. Anything can happen and has.
No, it can't. Oh, yes. I will kill the call.
It is live radio. You can't stop the feed. Can't stop it.
Yes, I can.
You can't stop the signal,
I've done
James.
I've done it before.
No, that's a good point. It is very unpredictable. Things can go very wrong, but more often things can go very, very right.
Last year, we literally abandoned a segment halfway through.
With good reason.
Yeah, no, sometimes things don't work out and you have to pivot and be ready. So that's part of the excitement of doing the telethon.
Yes. Things go wrong right. In the best way.
If a segment ends with, so that just happened.
Yeah, we're so excited. I'm so excited for this. It's probably my favorite day of the whole year, and it has been for the past two, and I just can't wait for it. So we're working hard on that, and I really, really hope everybody listening will participate. If everybody who listens and downloads this podcast shows up for the telethon, it will double our hopes and dreams. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much. Also wanted to remind everybody that the email address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. So, we might do some mail next week, and would really appreciate getting some new letters, some questions and ideas, and, whatever you want to hear about in the world of video gaming, we will, talk about it. So, you can find, of course, the email link in the show notes as well. And finally, want to thank Carl for being here as our special guest this week and give him an opportunity to promote his excellent website and series of podcasts.
Sure. There's crosstalk.com, spelled crosstawk.com, including such podcasts as Box Office Poison, which Johnny is on, of course, You listen to the most recent episode. John is actually not on that episode, but he's there in spirit as we talk
about. I kind of am on it.
You are in a way. When we talk about our movie of the month, the French horror film, and I use the term film lightly, Martyrs. It is something to be heard. And we also talk about such recent movies such as Argo, Seven Psychopaths, and others. So, if you're interested in such things can be found at crosstalk.com.
Excellent. I go there all the time.
I actually have something to promote as well.
Oh, go for it, man.
if somehow you don't have your fill of listening about Nintendo, listening to this podcast, I was on episode 39 of the Negative World podcast, my former stomping grounds. And so if you want to listen to a discussion of local multiplayer that doesn't consist of three guys just constantly saying that they don't have the time for it anymore or the friends for it anymore, head over there and listen to a glorious, glorious discussion of the best local multiplayer games.
To be fair, I never had the friends for it anymore.
Awesome. The Negative World show is really good. I mean, if I didn't think that was a really good podcast, Guillaume wouldn't be here right now. So obviously I would recommend it to
him. He'd be dead.
That's right.
You find that too funny.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week with more excellent Nintendo goodness. See you then.
All right.
Bye. I'm going to go mine more trees.
And hey, I mean, if you want to get hyped up for Sticker Star, the original Paper Mario is on Virtual Console for Wii. None of us really played it when it, you know, you did when they put it on Virtual Console?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So like it hasn't been that long.
I played it a little bit, but I didn't beat it. I just played a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You got your $10 worth and then you got out.
Probably not. It was probably like, I'll come back and play this later. I love this game. And then
That's the story of a lot of RPGs on Virtual Console.
Well, the funny thing is, I don't even own that many Virtual Console games like the rest of you. And for whatever reason, that's the one that said, let's get this. And then I'm like, wait, there's no chance in hell I'm going to play this whole game.
I was actually playing that game when my TV broke, a CRT TV. And I switched to an LCD TV. And I fired it up. You know, continuing my game, and I realized, oh, that's what people mean when they say that LCD is terrible for SD games.
Oh, especially for N64 games.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. There's like a tub of Vaseline on top of your screen.
Mm. Wow.
That's okay. imagery I didn't need.
Evocative.
And what exactly were they doing with such Vaseline around the television set?
Go ahead.
Most of my N64 playing was on a GX TV. I don't know if you guys remember that. We've talked about it a little bit before, but that at the time, although it was a very small screen, well, the small screen probably helped, but also it was one of the highest quality picture tubes you could get, short of like a $1,000 Sony Trinitron back in, you know, 1999, 2000.
It's all about the tubes.
So I always felt that my N64 games looked really good, and then I would go play them on other people's TVs and would say, oh my God. So, yeah, it's not even LCD. It goes back quite a ways. Especially if you had like, I knew people who had like big projection TVs. You remember these like back in the 90s?
Sure. They literally were projected big screen.
Actually had a projector with this kind of nasty matte finish on the cover on the screen that the image was projected onto. And N64 games looked fucking horrible on
They were so bad on those.
To be fair, so did everything else.
Yeah, they were just terrible technology. They just should have never been invented.
Really expensive. I knew people who had them, and I was like, how much did you pay for this? Because this football game looks awful.
Because it was the only way you could – I mean, you really couldn't make a giant tube for a TV.
Right. I mean, 32 inches was about the maximum for a tube, and that was a big, expensive tube.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not just that. The power draw of a tube that was much bigger would have been enormous.
Oh, yeah.
You'd have to double plug it in or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, but projection, I'm just...
Oh, it was the fucking stupidest technology ever.
I have a lot of good things to say about tube televisions. I have nothing good to say about projection televisions.
No I'm one so ever has.
I feel really bad. I started this tangent. Yeah, but yeah, good. It's not going to stay in.
All right.
Now, Johnny...
So you didn't... Go ahead.
I was going to say, John, if I remember my Jonathan Metz trivia, I believe 4 is your favorite, isn't it?
Well, I always say 4 and 6 are kind of tied. They're both in my top 3 games ever, along with Chrono Trigger. And I kind of go back and forth as to which one I like better. I'd say I probably like 4 a little better in that I really like how every character is unique and has his or her own abilities that are unique to that character. And I like that it forces characters in and out of your party based on the story so the characters, I mean, they level up and they gain new things, but they're not modular. You can't just tack on new abilities to characters. They are what they are.
Right.
And because the game constantly changes your party lineup, it forces you to play the game differently at every stage throughout the game. And I love that. I love that it asks you to really make the most out of the systems in the game. You really have to learn how to do all the different things that they let you do.
The one
that.
Ability,
I love the story of it too.
The one common thing that they have is their willingness to sacrifice themselves to let the others go on.
Yes, they're all very selfless characters. And you know, and FF4 has this awesome story premise in which you start out playing as a bad guy, and it's pretty obvious from the beginning that he's not a very nice person, and so you redeem him in the course of the story, which is just awesome. FF6 is really interesting because of the ensemble cast aspect of it. You know, Terra is arguably the main character, but then maybe Celis is the main character and maybe neither of them. And it has the whole thing about the world goes to shit and you can't turn it back. That's just the way it is. You have to, you know, make something happy out of a bad place. And I think that's just really interesting, this kind of post-apocalyptic aspect to the second half of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to, is it the early crop of games or is it an A? Is it an A or an O? I mean, and unfortunately, a lot of times with the first round of games that come out on the system, it's an O, not an A.
Sir, what the hell are you talking about?
Crap. The first crap of games. It's a discussion of launch games on systems when they come out.
But what is A and O? What do those mean?
Replace the O in crop with an A.
Crap.
Yes.
Ah, Jesus Christ, that is a stretch.
Okay. I'm not the only one confused by this, right?
No, it took me a while. Now I get it.
Okay.
Is it a crap of games or a crop of games?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So
it's not that meta.